Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, we talked to my good friend Willie T. Ribs from Uppity, our movie, and also the news is coming, and it's a good news. But first, there's Tommy John. They don't give an F. They give three Fs: fabric, fit, and function. Proprietary fabrics that perform like nothing you've ever worn before. No wedgie guaranteed. Comfortable, stay-put waistbands, luxurious, soft, feather-light, moisture-wicking, breathable fabrics designed to move with you. No bunching or riding up. If you don't love it, well, they have a guarantee. It's the best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free guarantee, but you're going to love it. I'm wearing mine right now. I'm wearing the T-shirt as well. And you can either get it online at TommyJohn.com, or you can go to one of 1,200 retail locations across the country, including Nordstrom stores nationwide. That's right. It is the best. It's Tommy John. They give three Fs. Upgrade your underwear to Tommy John. No adjustment needed. It's Tommy John, right, Dawson?
Hurry to TommyJohn.com/Adam for 20% off your first order. That's TommyJohn.com/Adam for 20% off. TommyJohn.com/Adam.
Adam Carolla is unprepared. Live all winter long.
Well, Kimmel dead, Adam again on stage in free ball. Totally unprepared with no material at all. He's gonna go.
He's gonna go.
He doesn't know.
Doesn't know.
What the hell he's gonna say until you tell him so.
He's gonna go.
He's gonna go.
He doesn't know.
Doesn't know.
Until you give him an idea.
Written out a ball. Get your ticket for the show. What word awaits? He's gonna go.
He's gonna go.
Adam Carolla is unprepared at the Pabst Theater in Milwaukee on January 24th and in Chicago at Park West on January 25th. Get prepared for Adam Carolla is unprepared by getting your tickets at adamcarolla.com.
Muhammad Ali, he said to me, you're going to deal with some challenges for one reason only. You're in an all-white sport. There was death threats. If this nigger races in this race, he might not leave alive.
It probably felt like it's me against the world.
You want a reason not to like me? I'm going to give you one.
Our leader once again, Willie T. Ribs, out in front. Willie T. Ribs, his fourth victory in the Trans Am Series. We have a winner of the Texas Challenge Trans Am.
They called me Uppity, and I loved it.
Willie G. Ribs on line six. And, hey, Willie.
What's going on, AC?
I'm doing well, my friend. Thanks for calling in.
Oh, hey, we never miss a date, ever.
You have a crazy work ethic and a crazy motor. And in the film, we kind of learned that your grandfather may have instilled that in you. Would you say that's a true statement?
Oh, yeah. No, he when he had me out on the ranch, when he said do something, you did it. And after, you know, you tasted shoe polish once, that's all it took.
He made you drink shoe polish?
Oh, yeah, yeah. He used to say to me, he says, get that handled. If you don't get it handled, I'm going to have my foot up your ass and twist it.
That makes sense.
And
the visual was pretty heavy.
Did in terms of racing, it's just something you did. It was in you the whole time, right? I mean, it just started at a young age. You wanted to drive, right?
Well, yeah, I was exposed to it through my dad, and you know, I was a lucky kid. I mean, I grew up and was pretty well to do, and with the finances to do what I wanted, you know, and I had motorcycles and go karts, and so I knew what I wanted to do at a very early age because my dad did it as a hobby, and it was meant to happen, Adam.
I forgot about this whole story, but you were nearly killed at age 8 when an out-of-control race car struck you when you were at a track, right?
Correct. Yeah, I was. my dad was racing one week in Northern California, a place called Vacaville. Mm-hmm. And we were there for the weekend. And when he was not on the track, I was out on the pit lane or near the pit lane timing cars. And one of the cars went out of control. Something broke in the rear suspension and it spun the car into the pit. It killed the driver and a mechanic and hit me and knocked me underneath the truck. And I was in a coma for, I don't know, a week or so, and my arm was broken. And, you know, a lot of people ask me, did that, wouldn't that deter most people? Well, not if you want to race. At least you know what it feels like to be in the hospital.
Well, you know, after we finished Uppity, we finished the next one was the Shelby doc, and Shelby's like, you watch that doc, he's like, I was in a Panamera road race in Mexico, and I broke my arm driving Austin Healey or something. It's like, I was racing the next week with a cast on. We just taped it to the steering wheel. Like, that's just the dudes, these guys, that's how they are. That's a completely different wiring. It sounds opposite of all our wiring. That would be lesson to Shelby or lesson to Willie that to never get around a car again, but you were right back into it. Now, of course, Willie was so young, he had to wait a little, but he got in it. Willie, that's what's not in the doc as well, is you were driving a car and killed somebody in Canada in an Indy race. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is correct. And that one was really difficult. It wasn't my fault. I was going about 30 miles per hour, and we were on a caution, and I was driving through sort of a slow chicane with cement walls on both sides, and a turn worker, I don't think he heard me coming because I was going so slow, but I came around the corner in the chicane, and he came right out into the track. He was looking up the track. He wasn't looking down the track. And I felt a bump in the back of the car. I didn't hit him with the front of the car. He sort of went into the side of the car in between the front wheel and the back wheel. And I felt a bump, and I didn't know what it was. And then halfway around the track, you know, on caution flag, I got a radio transmission from my team that I had hit a turn worker. And I said, I didn't even see the guy. I didn't hit anybody. Then I remembered I felt a bump in the back of the car. And I got to tell you, you know, turn workers, you know, they do their job for the love of the game.
Yeah, they volunteer mostly.
They volunteer for the love of the game. And that one, that I didn't feel at fault, but I felt bad, you know, for what had happened.
You obviously famously were sponsored by Bill Cosby, the doc. I mean, you have your Bruce Jenner at the time run-ins. You have your Bill Cosby run-ins. You have your Don Kings. Yeah. You have your Bernie Ecclestone, F1, owner of F1. You have, God, who else? Muhammad
Paul
Ali.
Paul
Newman. Jesus Christ. So, of course, we met Willie when we were doing the Newman doc, and that was a big part of that. What kind of guy was Newman to hang out at the track with?
PL was you know, cool. He was really, he wasn't. Muhammad Ali and I were very close as well, and I don't know if you mentioned Ali, but mm-hmm. Ali can deal with a big crowd. I was with him in London one day, and we went out, and you know, he was surrounded by people. I mean, like 100 people, and he could deal with. He was a big man, of course. Paul was more of a one-on-one guy, and he liked to go into the motorhome and tell stories and have a beer and. And he was just and great storyteller. You know, I mean, you know, great storyteller.
And he obviously found you the sponsorship and got you a ride in a Trans Am car. And, you know, Willie was an open wheel guy. He was driving in Europe, and then he was coming out here driving Formula Atlantic, which just sort of looks like a slightly smaller Indy or F1 car. So to get you into Trans Am, which are just big old hunking cars, it's really nothing like what you were driving. It's sort of switching sports almost. Mm. But he knew you were fast, and that's why he got you. He got you the ride. What was Don King like? I haven't heard anything from him lately.
This could be a long interview.
Is he like exactly what we thought he is, or did he have his quiet moments?
No. Don is not quiet when he sleeps.
Is he a bad guy?
No. Well, he's bad if you let him be bad.
Hmm. So he'll take
bad if you let him be. In other words, if Don, you know, thinks you're dumb, then Don's going to lay it on you.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, Don knew after about, oh, after the first half an hour, the first meeting, Don knew that he wasn't dealing with somebody that fell off the watermelon truck last night.
So well, I'm glad you said that, because I'd say cabbage.
Yeah.
But that's me.
We know what you meant.
One of the best experiences. He likes racial humor, and I'm good at that. So we work well together.
Right. Yeah. I'll be getting a call from Sharpton in an hour.
What's Sharpton like?
Quiet guy.
Greatest moments I've had is me and Willie driving to Indianapolis to the race and the motorcade and having a cut. People don't realize, you know, they go, Indy, what a spectacle. 240,000 people. Yeah, how do you think they all get there? You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's big parking lot.
It's crazy getting. You think getting to the Rose Bowl with 100,000 people or 90,000 people is a little bit hectic. What about 2.5 Rose Bowls or whatever they draw? I mean, they draw like 250,000 there, right, Willie?
No. Like 400,000.
Oh, really?
God.
Yeah.
400,000. That's bleachers and infield. And if you're not in a police escort from your hotel, if you're not a VIP or some of the muckety muck in the sport, you know, not to mention the drivers and the teams, you better get in line at about 3:30 a.m.
Right.
Or else you're going to be 5 hours getting in. If you start out at 9 a.m. in the morning, you're done.
People should go to Indy like people should go to the Kentucky Derby who have no interest in horses. It's just the spectacle.
It's to experience
it's the Grand Canyon.
The pure.
Well, yeah, it's not just a race. It's a happening. You know, there's certain happening events in this world. Of course, the Super Bowl is one of them. But, I mean, you put Indianapolis 500 right there. It's a big deal, and people go there, and you know, and it's an experience because you're going to see so many, you know, different things. You're going to see, of course, the race and the cars, but then you're going to go and, you know, you can go by the snake pit and see, you know, mud wrestling right during the race.
Oh, yeah.
Naked mud wrestling, you know, and
live show at Indy.
Pardon me?
Live show at Indy.
Oh yeah. No, it's a great atmosphere, and it's a party atmosphere in the biggest race in the world.
I don't know if I've shared this with you or if it's trickled down, but now, of course, tragically, we flew or Willie flew out to sit with John Singleton for a number of hours and talk about this project that could possibly go to Showtime. Now Don Cheadle has shown interest in it, so that hopefully is coming together as we speak, Willie.
Well, I follow John Cheadle from way back. He's a real smart guy, not to mention a great actor. I know he did. He portrayed my number one artist of all time, jazz musician Miles Davis.
Oh.
I mean, and I started listening to Miles Davis when I was 8 years old because that's all the records my dad had at home. He had only jazz. And, you know, he just portrayed Miles Davis and brilliant. And I think with him on the project is only going to enhance it.
Yeah, I'm hoping for that. Folks, if you we've been talking, so there'd been this kind of ups and downs with when we're releasing and we held it back because of these projects and Singleton passed and you know this whole, you know, we were talking earlier in the show, how can you plan life? Yep. You can't plan life with John Singleton. This guy's what the youngest, I think he's the youngest Oscar winner, Oscar nominee or whatever.
Sort of a director,
Director, and then he doesn't see his 52nd birthday, you know? So who that? And Willie's 65.
Well, and that was a shocker, Adam. I know you and I and Nate Adams were, you know, John was very excited about the project. I met with him three times, twice on his boat out in Marina Del Rey, and, you know, we went to dinner, him and my wife and I, and then next thing you know, literally a month later, he dies.
Just tragically. It's insane.
Just bang, just like that. And, you know, I got to tell you, I have never looked at life looking at the clock. Never looked at it. And you'll, like Bobby Unser and I are very close. I spent, my wife and I spent the weekend with him back 2 months ago, him and his wife. And the stories that you hear from him about, don't think about 2 days from now or next week. Go hard every day. And he does. I mean, he was in his wheelchair at 84 years old. He has this high-powered wheelchair. And he was launching himself up a ramp from his living room into his kitchen. He looked like Evel Knievel. And he was flying through the air in his wheelchair, and the wheels were spinning, and he hit the floor and spun the thing around, 84 years old.
Well, don't look at the clock. Look at the tack. That's my... Wow. Put that on a goddamn shirt. Willie, I'll let you go and I'll give it some plugs and we'll see you real soon, I hope.
I'll see you down in LA in a week.
Nice. Oh yeah. Thanks, Willie. It's an interesting cat.
Oh yeah.
So it's now out. You can go to Chassis, Chassy, and get it. But I think was it also on iTunes and Google Play and that kind of stuff, Max Pat?
Yeah, it's on. If you do Apple TV, leave a review, too. That helps a lot.
Yeah, and if you see it, leave a review on, like, IMDb or Rotten Tomatoes or whatever. It's a really powerful piece, and we're really proud of it.
You'll get it from 6.6 to, or 7.6 to 7.7 on IMDb.
Yeah.
A real climb.
Yeah. So do that and check that out. All right. Quick bit of theater panel by committee discussion. I built myself a theater, and it's very enjoyable, and mostly the family's using the bejesus out of it.
Have you taken a pass at it yet?
I watched Shelby American there with Sonny. It was like, this thing's on Netflix, and I'm going to break in this fucker, and we're going to sit here, and we're going to watch this movie. And I watched a screener of 1917 there.
Sweet.
Alone. Sweet. Nice. But mainly, the family's been using the That's crap great. Out of it, mainly Natalia. And I have, the good news is, when you build a theater, sort of by yourself, it's a lot of work, but you get to learn how to build a movie theater. But people discount that part of life. They go, let somebody else. Okay. Well, then do you know that there's Gene or Cotton insulation on the screen wall that's 2 inches thick, and the side walls, the right and left one, is 1 inch thick, and then the back is 2 inch foam. I know that because I now built the theater. I didn't formally know that.
No way.
Now I know how insulation and sound deadening and side speakers and speaker mounting and center speakers and subwoofers. Like, I've learned all that shit because I built the theater. I'm not an expert, but I know more than I did before I built the theater.
Now, what does Mike Lynch's sleeping bag go?
Mike Lynch's sleeping bag goes, air mattress, goes right in front of the front row of the theater. Now, I was standing in my theater, and I was staring at the back wall, and I saw something that alarmed me. And what I saw, if you blow up the back wall, and we'll put these theaters, these pictures up at adamcarolla.com. If you stare at the back wall,
there's
2x2 squares, 2 foot by 2 foot by 2 inches deep. And they adhere to the wall. And they're going one direction. There's a pattern on it. And the pattern goes, it's a weird thing. You have to stare at it for a little while. But the pattern just kind of moves along in one direction, up and down, up and down for about 6 or 7. And the very last one, which is cut, that's the tough part, which is cut, is going the other direction.
Yeah.
It's going sideways. You guys, by the way, you guys, people hear this and they go, why would somebody? This happens all the time. This is how everyone does stuff. I order it. I get the thing. I have my guy. I go, okay, we're either going to do this. We're either going to start in the center and move right to left, in which case we're going to have to cut an inch and a half off of each one on the right side and on the left side. Or we start on the right, go across the wall, and we have to cut 3 inches off the last one because we didn't split it.
Right.
It's like you're doing tile. And you have to make an executive decision because you're also, anytime you cut something, you're cutting off the factory edge and you're giving yourself an opportunity to have a bad edge. So I said, well, it's all black and it's all patterns, all whatever. Start with a full one and just cut the last one, push it up against the wall. No one will notice. But I started noticing it's going the wrong direction.
Yes, man.
So then I said,
I'm so glad that drives you nuts. That would drive me nuts.
Started to drive me nuts. The reason it drives me nuts is not because it has any effect acoustically. It's because you had the opportunity to do it this way, and you didn't. And now you've cut the tile, and you can't.
Did you come up with a solution that satisfies you?
I did not, but someone did for me.
Okay, can I tell you what my solution would be? Tell me if it's anywhere near it or if this is satisfying. Because you know you've cut the one edge, so now it's unusable. You can't flip it. You know what I'm saying? The one edge of the one you've cut. Take the one in the middle of the other two, turn that, and now you have an alternating pattern, sideways, vertical, sideways, vertical.
You, my friend, are a genius. Or you sent me a tweet on December 27th.
I've never seen this picture in my life.
Somebody said to me, first answer everyone gave was, buy three more panels and do it right. I said, okay, that's always an option to buy three. I like when people go, well, why don't you just buy three panels? Yes, of course. Yeah. Of course, it's always an option.
Just fix it.
To pay and buy new ones and do it the right direction. Then a handful of people did the, well, just rotate it. But I was like, it's cut. It's cut 3 inches. You can't rotate it. And then somebody got me excited and went, well, just rotate the bottom one or the top one. It sounded like it was going to work. And I was like, huh? Then it didn't. And then some hero
who went
to the same boarding school as Brian said, alternate. Now, the alternating of the pattern doesn't necessarily have to work if you're off the pattern. See, if you start, I think there's a version where it doesn't work out, an odd or an even version.
Once you get to the other side, if you have a certain, right.
But it did work out. So I then got
the right number of panels.
My guy. And so we had to change three panels to go the other direction. And now the pattern alternates as you go down. And now, even though the panel, it's funny, the panel that was fucked up was never touched. Never touched.
Okay.
It now makes sense. In my mind,
there it is.
Because I alternated the patterns. Oh,
it looks cool.
Solid.
Boy, was I celebrated at the home that day.
Oh, I'm sure. The ticker tape parade.
Lauded.
Oh my God.
Pick what we're having tonight.
Lionized.
Oh, man. The pictures were going up all over the place.
Yeah, please.
They're fighting over the 3x3 foot mural.
So I found that, people like pictures of movie theaters and construction. And B, somebody tweeted me this, and I said, fine, I'll do it. And I alternated the pattern, just like Brian said.
Dare I say a little better worked. Alternated?
It does. All right, let's take a quick break, and let's come back and do the news right after this.
Adam Carolla's new book, I'm Your Emotional Support Animal, Navigating Our All-Woke, No-Joke Culture. It's available for pre-sale now at adamcarolla.com. Frank, funny, and utterly unapologetic, this is not a book for those who need a trigger warning, but is the book for everyone who wants to hit the snooze bar on the woke culture. I'm Your Emotional Support Animal by Adam Carolla. Pre-order it now at adamcarolla.com.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gino Grad. Breaking viral. All those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gino Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Need news with Gino Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
So the only thing that upsets me about the Willie T. Ribs and Uppity and his incredible journey, incredible story, is he's a 65-year-old black man living in the United States who had a much better childhood than me.
Oh, and how?
It sounds like
infinitely go-karts. Better. Oh, yeah. Infinitely better than my childhood.
Yeah, by a damn
God
sight.
God damn. I hate that. Sorry.
Well, the third day of Harvey Weinstein's sex crimes trial continued with more courtroom drama on Wednesday as the disgraced movie mogul's defense lawyer filed a motion to excuse the judge from the case over what they see as fair treatment from the whole cell phone debacle the day before.
Jesus Christ.
So the motion refers to the comments made by Judge James Burke Tuesday when he caught Weinstein using his cell phone and asked if it was worth going to jail over.
Remember when you know the theory of the time I almost got into a fist fight with the Dodger coach on the celebrity baseball game. I thought he was, you know, third base coach for the Mud Hens, so I told him to fuck off. He turned out to run William Morris or something. And I saw immediately the look on his face. Like, I've been told to fuck off in 44 years. Nobody's told me to
fuck
off.
That guy's dead.
And this guy has no... Weinstein's had his ass kissed. So colossally,
quite literally.
In the shower.
But not just like a celebrity's had his ass kissed.
Like,
everyone,
like a mogul. You defer to him.
But not only that, celebrities get their ass kissed, but Matt Damon, you kiss his ass. But he's not going to, he doesn't have the power to do anything for you. He's an actor. You know, maybe there's something, but you know what I'm saying.
Right.
Weinstein, you need him
for
something. This whole town has been kissing his ass for 35 years, and so he doesn't know how to act. He doesn't know, like when he pulls out his cell phone when the judge is talking, and the judge goes, what the fuck? And he goes, what? What? That's what's going
he
on.
He might as well be at the Four Seasons having lunch.
He literally, like, there literally needs to be some sort of immersion, world application, decompression.
Yeah.
The first thing they need to do with these guys is, you know, they do all the mock trials and here's what to say and don't say that and do this and they coach them up and Dr. Phil and blah, blah, blah. First thing they need is like, they need to work at an Arby's for a week. You know what I mean? Just like, you need to be a fucking citizen.
They need a gap year.
Yeah, you don't know how to be a citizen. Yeah. You don't know what to do. You're used to telling judges, so blow me. I'm doing some e-trading. Sorry.
Well, and that's the thing. That's why, you know, famously, you know, people would go to the police and stuff, and they'd be like, what are you going to do? Because,
right.
You know, Harvey has reach. So now
like your media training class, like, here, we offer this new class, so you're no longer a mogul.
Right. So, exactly. So he's, not only is he not apologetic, he's outraged at the thought of the judge yelling at him.
They have seminars for the young guys coming into the NFL to learn
the rookie symposium.
So it's like you were poor, now you got to learn how to be rich. Let's just have that guy's flunky brother come in and go, so you're rich, now you have to learn how to be normal.
That's right.
Welcome to the Fall from Grace Symposium.
Right.
I'm Mr. Cosby. Move over. Make room for Mr. Weinstein.
So Weinstein's...
Mr. Spacey, we'll get to your question later.
Weinstein's legal team writes that Burke's comments reflect animus toward the former film producer, and they're questioning his ability to be impartial now. The 7-page motion also took issue with some of Burke's other decisions, including not adjourning the trial for a, quote, cooling off period after some new sex crime charges were filed against Weinstein on Monday. So they want this guy out.
It's a bold strategy. strategy.
No.
You should ask Aragos next,
go after the judge.
Next episode how often it works filing a motion to get the judge removed. I imagine that backfires far more often than it works.
Yeah, well, if it doesn't work, now you have one pissed off judge.
That's exactly. The thing. That's the dice roll.
Yeah. I think on Reasonable Doubt this week, we have the attorney for Nicholas Sandman who CNN settled with him. I hadn't seen it on CNN, but I had heard they settled. And I said they were going to have to settle.
Nick has tweeted that they settled as well.
Yeah, so they settled up with him.
Which one was he?
He was the kid wearing the MAGA hat who was standing in front of the American Indian guy who turned out to be a fucking kook job. And they had all the tape. They had the black Israelites taunting them. They had everything. And they cooked it to look like this sort of little white supremacist was attacking this native elder. And they had the fucking info, and they just cooked it this way.
They just chopped it.
A little better theme for them, a little more on brand, white guy wearing the MAGA hat. And that white guy was 16, and he basically said, you've ruined my image, you've ruined my name, you've tarnished this, and you cooked it. You had the tape, and you did not do your job. And you have to kind of prove some malice there, but... I'd been thinking about it. It's like they had the black Israelites yelling at them. They had the context of the whole thing. They whacked it into this thing that was like young white guy goes and smugly preens in front of elder, who, by the way, elder guy turned out to be a piece of shit as well. And then there was the whole black Israelite thing, but none of that factored into the theme of evil whitey in the MAGA hat. So they cooked it and they put it out there and then they pushed it out and everyone ran with it the same way we run with all the Jussie Smollett. Second we hear that, oh boy, you see what happened? Oh, boom. And it just blows up. And then he sued.
Do we know the number? Will it ever be disclosed?
Well, we're going to try to...
I heard $275 million was the initial.
Come on.
But then they settled.
Yeah,
they
that's a silly number.
And it's also a weird thing with... If you're a news organization, because when you settle, you're basically going, we're not going to win, or we want this. If it gets to trial, it's going to look bad for a news organization. It was sort of cooking things, but it's also a little admission of guilt. But we'll figure it out with Garrigus and the attorney for Sandman's calling in. He's also, by the way, who knows what he got? Garrigus will tell it. I mean, Garrigus will sniff it out. He'll figure it out. Give us a range, but. He's now, it's not just CNN. He's, what's he got? NBC? Washington Post? He's got everyone who ran with it to go after. This fucking kid's going to hit major jackpot paydays all around the country.
One of his lawyers tweeted, I want to thank everyone for the many good wishes received today. Now we turn our attention to NBC, Washington Post, and additional defendants to be named soon.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they're... I don't know if you can go after, you know, members of The View or whatever, but there's celebrities that were like doxing. Like, this kid deserves, here's his address. Go over there and punch him and stuff. Like, he's getting doxed by Kathy Griffin or whomever. Right. They're like, at some point.
It's harassment.
The kid's a minor and you're giving out an address and saying someone ought to punch him in his face. Like,
Mayor of Zero Fucksville.
Yeah. I'm not a litigious guy, but I am glad because I don't want this shit. You got to think before you fucking cook a narrative as a news out and put it out. You better be able to back it up both sides.
And I don't mean to be naive, but hopefully this will set a brand new precedent overall because they don't want to get sued again. How many tries do you get at this before you just tank?
And how about the poor black Israelites who are nuts and want attention, who get completely clipped out of this?
What happened to us?
It's like, you're black. You don't fit. We got a theme going here. You don't work in here.
They got Times Square covered, though.
They do. God, do they. And they also got the Jewish supermarket covered over there in Brooklyn or whatever.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, Elton John, Kylie Jenner, Nicole Kidman, Kylie Minogue, Chris Hemsworth, Pink, and Metallica all have something in common. They are the latest celebrities to donate to the Australian wildfire crisis. Their donations, the reason I picked them, was because their donations range from $500,000 to $1 million each. Scientists, and it wasn't the other ones were like, you know, we raise this much. These sound like personal donations. Scientists estimate that about a billion animals have been killed by the fire. That does not include, you know, frogs and insects and invertebrates. These are birds and reptiles and mammals. Meanwhile, thunderstorms and showers brought some relief for firefighters, but also raised concerns that lightning will spark more fires before the dangerous hot and windy conditions return. Because it sounds so stupid to forget this, but it's summer there.
Mm.
You know, it's not chilly and brisk at all.
I heard a story that they arrested 24
yes.
arsonists?
Yeah.
What the hell goes on? First off, what's up with Australia? And secondly, is there fires? And then people go, oh, I forgot I was an arsonist.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Are they being reminded?
Well, and that's an interesting thing. I was, you know, I didn't include that for a reason because at the time it made sense in my head. They did arrest about 24 people for, you know, teenagers and minors, you know, just setting fires probably by accident, maybe some not. And then when I Googled.
Well, wait a minute. You get arrested for arson.
Yeah, it's not an accident.
What'd you do?
But that's what they're saying. Like, you know, kids basically, you know, a bonfire party in the park, not like I want to, you know, destroy this country. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So then I Googled just arsonists Australia, and then a bunch of things came up at literally the headline was like, you morons, it's not arson, you dipshits, it's not that, it's climate change.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know what the cover-up is, what the spin is.
It's pretty easy. I mean, I thought about it. It's the same spin that we put on, like, there's a shooting, but the guy made the gun out of parts or whatever, and it doesn't fit a narrative to that crowd. You know what I mean? Or the guy gets up to shoot everyone in church, and a couple parishioners cap him in 6 seconds. Like it doesn't fly with the narrative. The narrative is climate change, not arson. My argument is, you still need a tinderbox. Like it's not
right.
If you can do climate change and arson, we can have win. We can be a win-win for all of us.
Which, we have it all.
Which is because of climate change, these guys who threw the cigarette into the brush were able to light up several thousand acres. Like, I don't think climate change sparks fires. It gives you the ability to spark a fire.
And
so whether it's lightning or a teenager, you can still work the climate change angle. The notion is like, we don't want to get the emphasis off the climate change and onto the arsonist.
And say, have something else to blame it on and say, well, that was just a fluke.
Yeah, it's like saying you live in a house and the house is, you know, soaked in wood and kerosene, and then a space heater started a fire. It's like you can still
combination of factors.
Yeah,
wouldn't it happen the other way around? Yeah,
I guess. I don't know.
And unfortunately, I mean, that story is going to be developing for weeks. They are not close to pushing it back. And I don't know enough about, obviously, I don't know enough about firefighting, but they even said that the rain, I heard this on the radio on the way here, I think yesterday, the rain not only didn't really help, but it complicated the firefighter's ability to do a back burn. And I don't really understand what a back burn is. Do you?
Yeah.
Mr. Skin talks about that a lot on our show.
I think they're trying
to fight fire with fire.
I think they're trying to eliminate they're trying to eliminate fuel for the fire by burning it in their controlled way.
Interesting.
I imagine. So I guess the deal is a fire is bad, but a fire you don't control is bad than a fire you do control. So I guess it's sort of like scuttling a ship or something. Like, this is bad, but it's not as bad as if the Germans get hold of it.
Okay.
So if you burn 200 yards of, you know, whatever, you know, that can't catch on fire and then create more
fire. It's your control.
As I understand it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, here's a firefighter story that is a major candidate for definitely not a Jew. Mm-hmm. A Louisiana firefighter was so drunk over the weekend that he crashed his car into a ditch, and he tried to pull it out with a fire truck that he stole from a nearby fire station.
It wasn't even his fire station?
No!
It's a hero.
Craig Trippy Jr. Crashed his little Honda Civic on a highway near Baton Rouge around 2 a.m., but he managed to walk to a fire department, hop into a fire truck, and drive it back to the scene, according to the report. The intoxicated driver then attached a fire hose to both vehicles in an attempt to dislodge the wrecked sedan from the ditch, kind of pull it out. It didn't work, though. He was sitting in the middle of the road when deputies arrived at the scene. Authorities said the man damaged the fire truck during its rescue, of course. He was charged with driving while intoxicated and unauthorized use of a motor vehicle, a.k.a. a fire truck. That wasn't his.
Not his. So
they leave the keys in the ignition.
I mean, obviously he's driven a fire truck, so he kind of gets it. And maybe they do leave the keys in the ignition.
I have to imagine.
It's all about speed.
In certain rural areas, even in populated areas, you're friendly with the local fire department.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Like,
he's probably been
assume.
There before. And
yeah.
Had a bright idea.
I guess.
It was a bright idea. It didn't work, but it was at least inspired.
No, I know. I cannot judge, because as you tell the story, I'm like, that sounds like something I do. Sounds perfect.
Drove it right off the back of a pallet.
Yeah, it did. Yeah. Drive it off the back of a pickup truck, or off the back of a tow truck.
Right. TMZ reports that Baltimore Orioles pitcher Miguel Castro says he's lucky to be alive today. And he said he was robbed at gunpoint, would have been shot, but the weapon jammed. The 25-year-old...
Did he go back to his native something?
Oh, hold tight. The 25-year-old
like went back to, yeah.
said on Tuesday he was on a train in the Dominican Republic.
Oh, hold on. The room's spinning. The room is spinning.
Drink of water.
Athletes, don't go back. Don't come here, get rich, and then go back. It doesn't work out.
Wasn't there a David Ortiz story where someone like, tried
got
to
shot
stab him
at a bar?
Something?
Yeah, he got shot.
So, I forget what it was. Yeah, he got shot. Or
yes,
at a bar or something. Yeah. Someone mistake someone for whatever. I forget.
Yeah,
Big
Poppy was in a bar. Somebody came in, mistook him for somebody, and shot him in the side.
Yeah,
they did. They were pretty fast and loose with life over there.
Seems
Sorry.
To be.
Casual.
He was jumped and robbed by two men. Castro claims the guy took his chain, then attempted to shoot him, but the
Do
gun
not
locked
wear
up.
A chain yeah. back to the hometown you yeah. were in Just when you become rich.
Keep your head down. Castro's rep says he's shaken up, but he's fine. Miguel added crimes in his hometown have to stop ASAP.
Okay, should have said that before.
Yeah, starting yesterday.
Where were you before you got mugged? The chain, I was thinking that Deshaun Watson's got a big chain. Big chains. It's up there with piercings with me, and then especially like nose piercings and stuff. I just
don't get it.
I don't get it. Feels like you are literally wearing 500 grand worth of material around your neck. Mm-hmm. Like, it's your neck. Somebody wants to get it, you could be choked. You know?
Could be grabbed by the back of the chain.
Yes.
Yep.
You could do it on the football field, or you could do it in the Dominican Republic. I'm just saying, like, this, I don't see the upside to that. I get the upside to driving a Bentley or a Lamborghini. Mm-hmm. Like, I get it. Like, you're cool. You have money. You want to pull up to the club. And
luxury.
I guess you want to pull up to the club with a chain as well. But then you got to leave. And then somebody could
then
want
what?
That chain.
That's the other thing. I mean, I get that you're allowed to, in the past, you could chew tobacco. You kind of take your time. You could be maybe a little oversized in baseball. But you're an athlete. You're running. What are you doing with all the jewelry? Why is that even allowed?
It's like bopping around some guys. It's like this. They're turning second. You see it pop out of the jersey and it's slapping
it's
around.
It's shocking that it's allowed.
I don't know. I have very... bizarre.
There's the chain.
There it is.
Very bizarre. I have interesting thoughts about what's allowed and what's not allowed in sports. Like
a lot of empty seats.
There's a uniform. There's a uniform that people wear, but then there's also practice of putting pine tar over the logo of the front of the batting helmet, obscuring the logo on the front of the batting helmet. So if you tune in and the Angels are playing the Red Sox momentarily, you might not know what team's up with the batting helmet. And it's like, why isn't that a rule?
Why
they have, there's nothing but rules. In football, it's like, some guys wear thigh pads. Some guys don't wear thigh pads. You don't have to wear thigh pads. Most of the guys.
The NFL
or
changed,
do you want stirrups?
The NFL
stirrups.
Changed that, by the way.
Did they?
Oh, everything's in lockstep. You have to have your socks, shirt tucked in, jersey tucked in, I should say.
Well,
socks.
That, but still, guys, some guys don't
do
thigh pads.
They changed it.
Oh, they do?
They did. That was the rule as of, a couple years ago. You could go without the kickers, wide receivers, lots of guys went without. Now you'll see the guys wearing tiny, tiny, tiny little thigh pads and knee pads because you have to wear something. They made that a rule. I think it was a head injury rule, like knees hitting heads.
Well, speaking of head injury, when you box, they have mouthpieces that are there to stop you from being concussed.
Right.
And if you have a mouthpiece in, and you get smacked in the head, you have a better shot of withstanding the concussion. You see these guys, these cornerbacks, they're out on the island. The fucking mouthpiece dangling out in front of them.
Like, you're about to have an impact, man.
Just dangling out. Who knows? Look, the next 8 seconds, there could be an overthrown ball, or you could run into someone at a combined 45 miles an hour with your head. I don't know. The thing's orange or black or white, and it's just dangling in front of you, and you're standing out on an island. Why doesn't the ref go, hey, we got a rule here. Got to put the concussion protocol.
Jesus.
Yeah, I don't know why some things are rules, aren't rules, aren't enforced, are enforced. It seemed like if wearing the mouthpiece is a safety thing, and anyone who's played football knows it is a real safety thing, then why are you letting so many guys line it up with the thing dangling? It's very visible, just dangling out of the front of their helmet.
Is it a cool guy thing, like hockey?
Yes. Yeah.
When you were grandfathered and you didn't have to do all this, the other thing?
It's a cool guy thing. I think we can blame Deion Sanders for the cool guy thing. He liked to be kind of undone. And he'd have one chin strap like busted open.
He could pull it off. Bow tie loose.
He could pull it off. Yeah.
Going back, I don't understand the pine tar thing. What's the point?
All right. Well, I'll tell you the point.
I mean, I can Google it later if it's too long.
I'll tell you what makes me violent.
Okay.
I do my 20 minutes on what the fuck with the pine tar schmutzed all over the front of the logo. It's also, I don't know. I look at it as sort of antisocial behavior. Your team has a team. Your team has a logo. And you've taken the shit and you smeared it all over the front of the fucking batting helmet's logo. And then...
Oh, weird.
Manny Ramirez was famous for that, yeah.
Now, it looks like a seagull ate chili and shit all over Manny Ramirez's head. All right. When I do this complaint, after I'm done with my 20 minutes of it, the person I do it to invariably...
Either way.
Indubitably
says, they used the pine tar to grip the bat. And I go, no shit.
Really? Tell me more.
Tell me more, dumb person. Yes. I'm not asking why does pine tar exist. I'm saying why is it all over the fucking... Look, a gymnast use a rosin bag. It's not all over their fucking head. I'm not asking what is it.
Oh, pitchers use a rosin bag. It's in the back of the mound.
I'm not asking what it is.
Right.
I'm asking why is it all over the fucking helmet? And they go, well, they like to get the...
It could also be on the top of the helmet, on the back of the helmet. It could be really anywhere.
If anyone who's used a pine tar rag or dealt with pine tar, which I have, when I played baseball in high school, I used a wooden bat for quite an amount of time, and then I ended up breaking so many wooden bats that I was like, fuck it, I'm using aluminum bats, which I should have done in the first place. But I had a pine tar rag. Pine tar is pine and tar. You go to a fucking very pine sticky tree and you see some sap or something, ugh, and you put your finger on it, your fucking finger will smell like pine for 3 weeks.
It's there for
like,
months.
It's not going anywhere. Get the fucking pine tar rag, do it up on the bat, then walk your ass up there, strike out, and come back. You don't need to fucking bring half a fucking tree with you to
on
the
head.
Fucking home plate. And you're wearing gloves. The gloves are covered with pine tar. The bat handle, the grip, is covered with pine tar. What kind of issue are we going to have with adhesion here for this for this 3 minute walk back and forth to the plate? You'll be lucky to get rid of the fucking pine tar before you go out that night. What is this? He wants the pine tar. It's all over the fucking top of his head. Now, somebody should go. George Brett, famously.
Indeed.
Had too much pine tar up the handle of his bat.
Of the Kansas City Royals.
That's right.
Which then could affect things because it could make contact with the ball or get on the ball or whatever that rule is. It's all over your fucking helmet. So we have a rule as it pertains to the bat, but not a rule as it pertains to how much of it you slather on top of your fucking helmet. And by the way, Manny Ramirez is just a douche. You don't need all that. You're basically going, fuck you, franchise. I do what I do.
Yeah. I do what I want.
Fuck you.
All right.
It's there because it's sticky.
Thank you, Brian.
I do.
I am so in
love. I'm in love with the new person who tells me what happened when it happened. That's my... What happened? You got a DUI? Yeah, I was drunk when I was driving. Yeah, okay. I know what a DUI is.
The explanation is just the thing that happened.
I was driving under the influence.
There's a new world order.
I had too many beers.
Where you explain what happened, which was what is or how it worked. Yeah. And by the way, that's what you gleaned from this person's 20-minute soliloquy about why is the pine tar all over the top of the helmet. You're going to then explain to me what pine tar is.
You see, the pine tar's on the helmet.
It's fucking weird. To be fair to people, I don't think they listen.
That's probably
true. I would assume they're tuned out.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. So TMZ reports that the woman who was the inspiration for Jennifer Lopez's character in Hustlers is suing the production company.
Ooh, I heard about that.
Yes, claiming they used her likeness and story without permission and defamed her in the process. Mm. Her name's...
If I were a girl, you know, if I was as a dude, as a white dude, Mayonnaise is my rap name. Mm. If I was a chick, it'd be her likeness.
That's good.
It's positive.
Like Her Highness.
It's got a feminine vibe to it.
A little royal.
Her likeness.
That's good.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I like it.
Mayonnaise and her likeness could get together with 2 Chainz and go to Puerto Rico and get rolled.
Yeah.
Have you seen Hustlers yet?
No, I hear it's good.
Oh, you got to get a screener of that.
I haven't seen it either.
Oh, maybe I do.
You do. I mean, it's part of the SAG after screeners.
I heard it's good.
It is a good movie.
So, Samantha Barbash.
Barbash.
Oh, God damn. That is
Come on.
Maybe it's Barbish, but it's spelled Barbash.
Celery, I think that's how it's
pronounced. Celery. Claims in her suit, producers approached her to get her consent for the movie. She turned them down, but J-Lo went ahead and played the character anyway. Oh. Barbash says the character in the movie is portrayed as using and manufacturing illegal substances in her home where she lived with her child. She says that is untrue and offensive. She is suing for $40 million. She also wants an order requiring producers to turn over all copies of the movie. Give them to Samantha.
I do love those.
This is a sad day.
She's my chick.
Hey, we're not going to be able to keep the lights on over here, Bob's Classy Lady, after 2 p.m. because we're being sued. This litigious bitch over here was named after... remember the time the emergency brake came loose on the Nova and it went through the back of the bar over there? That's her stage name. Barbash. She, she's pretty litigious little witch over there, and she's got herself... she's got lawyered up with Mark Garagos over there, who used to be a fan of... Anyway, after 31 glorious years in existence, Bob's Classy Lady is not going to have an open sign on it tomorrow for the first time in 31 years. Anyone's going to the bathroom, make sure and tip Rollo real well, because you won't be seeing that man again unless he's driving your Uber, brother. You know, this DJ's been there since opening day. That's what we called it. By the way, we still have the businessman's lunch going on. I mean, we do shut our lights at 2, but the businessman lunch goes from 11 a.m. to 1:30 p.m., and there's a bottomless bucket of shrimp for you out there. Shrimp langostino. Langostino, it's miniature lobster. Google it. I digress. I know that's a word that you don't hear a lot from strip DJs, but you know what? I think that's what's different about me. I think that's what's different about Bob's Classy Lady, 31 years in business, 31 years giving back to the community, 31 years making an example of the youth of this community. By the way, her likeness, stage four. I'm going to play a song by Mayonnaise coming up here, just kind of put a little flavor on. I'm sorry for the morose. Again, morose, not a word to hear tossed around the strip club DJ booth, but this litigious witch. Came Jade quit. I just heard Jade stage 5, right? She's got the box with the wood grain in it and the pictures of her kids, and she's walking for the door. Jade, come back or take me.
All right. That's exactly what's about to happen.
Mm.
Dark day, the Bob's Classy Lady.
Mm. All right, let's bring it home.
You got it. We're not going to top that. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
Well, you just did it now, didn't you, bucko?
Gina Grad! That was the news with Gina Grad.
Last but not least, Geico. Everyone's got the to-do list. How about you, Ed? Save a bunch of money on your auto insurance at Geico. That is geico.com. Just jump on geico.com and see in 15 minutes. Well, you could be saving up to 15% or even more. Take that extra money and you put it in your pocket. Get yourself a chain. Go down to Puerto Rico. Be the most rewarding thing you do all day at Geico. That is geico.com. We're going to do some Eat Your Feelings tomorrow.
Yes, I'm excited about this one.
My book, I'm Your Emotional Support Animal, is available for pre-order on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and all that, adamcarolla.com. If you want to do that, check out Uppity at Chassie, C-H-A-S-S-Y. Say hi to Willie T, who's all over that movie, baby. And so, until next time, it's Adam Carolla, Willie T, Ribs, Gina Grand, Ball Brian. Say mahalo. I love it. Now kill yourself.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow Ace on Twitter at Adam Carolla. Give us a voicemail. Here's the phone number. Get a pencil. 888-634-1744. Get your tickets to everything by going to the website, adamcarolla.com.